The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
You don't want it. You don't need it. But you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
So I'm putting this podcast out today. It's a part one of a two-part interview that I did with Mike Richmond. Mike's an author, longtime Skins historian. He wrote a book about Joe Gibbs. He wrote the Redskins Encyclopedia. And the book that just came out this week that Mike authored is called George Allen, A Football Life. It is the book about George Allen, the second greatest coach in franchise history after Joe Gibbs, and I believe the man responsible for creating the passion that really still exists today, lesser form than maybe 10 years ago because of what we've gone through as a fan base with Dan Snyder. But George Allen, when he arrived in 1971, the team was a popular team, but it wasn't the sports entity in town that it became when George Allen got here and started to win. Mike has this book out. You can find the book anywhere you get a book. You can go to MikeRichmondJournalist.com to get a signed copy of the book. So for some of you, maybe not for all of you, but I think for some of you of a certain age, I think you'll enjoy kind of the story of George Allen, the stories that Mike told me. And because we ended up talking for a much longer period of time than I had anticipated, I'm splitting it up into two parts. Part one today on Saturday, November 4th, and next Saturday on November 11th, I'll put the second part out. But I think you'll enjoy it. And I started off by asking Mike if he agreed that George Allen is really the beginning of this passionate following that followed, his arrival in D.C. in 71? Or did he think that the passion existed, you know, with during the Sonny Jurgensen years, during the 60s, when they were great offensively, but they didn't win? You know, Lombardi was here in 69, but really, I started off by asking him if he agrees with me that 71 was the beginning of Washington Redskins, Washington football team, Washington Commanders football becoming the passion that it became.
I do agree with that. In the 60s, as you know, right, they had the Sonny Jurgensen-led offensive explosion, and they started drawing, they started selling out at RFK Stadium as of 1966 because of that, for that very reason. They were so entertaining on offense. But it wasn't until Allen came here in 1971 and really turned them into a bona fide winner that true excitement really, really began that very first season, 1971. Now, Lombardi was here in 69, and they actually had a winning season, 7-5-2.
Right.
But they weren't really much of a threat that year. I mean, of course, they didn't go to the postseason. So it wasn't until Allen came here in 71. I mean, he set the franchise on course to really, I mean, the fans had a major taste of winning during the Allen era, and then it just, we had the interim with Pardee, but then it, of course, just continued under Joe Gibbs. So, yes, in answer to your question, I do agree with that. He turned this town upside down in terms of, fans were going crazy. After the Redskins beat the Cowboys in 1971 to go 3-0 in his first season, 10,000 fans swarmed the tarmac. Well, many of them actually came on the tarmac at Dulles Airport to greet the team coming back from Dallas.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be unthinkable today because of the precautions that are taken at airports. But many, many fans, I mean, they wanted to greet the team and greet Allen. And so you could tell, I mean, this town was really longing for a winner, and Allen delivered.
Yeah, I remember talking to Bruce when he was here, and he said, you know, that was the first realization of how big it was. You know, they beat the Cowboys in the Cotton Bowl in a rainstorm, and like you said, literally 10,000 people are waiting for them to return from Dallas that particular season. All right, so I want to begin with this. Tell me sort of the beginning of this book. Is it George Allen's entire life? Is it George Allen's football life? Or is it George Allen in D.C.?
It is George Allen's entire life.
Okay.
I wanted to write the definitive biography of George Allen. I went all the way back to his youth. He grew up in the Detroit area. He grew up during the Great Depression. And I documented things about him that really, I mean, you can see traits in him at that point. We all know he had that workaholic nature as a coach. You know, it was details. I mean, he had to know everything about every opposing team. He had that characteristic in him as a kid. You know, he was a hard worker. He had to work for the family, actually, because the father, he really didn't earn much at that time. His mother didn't work. So George Allen really was supporting the family in a large way. So that type A personality in him that we really came to know later on down the road when he became one of the elite coaches in the league, I mean, that really started in his youth. So, yeah, I documented all of that, but from his youth, the colleges, he attended a series of colleges. He had to work his way through. He was in the Navy V-12 program during World War II. He actually got his first coaching opportunity coaching the 150-pound team at Michigan, which was his alma mater, but for his master's degree.
What did he get his master's in?
Education.
Oh, okay.
When he became a coach, that's why he was known so much as a teacher. In practice, I mean, I know you've seen the films like 1971, Three Cheers for the Redskins.
Yeah.
He's teaching in that practice, you know, the player, you know, positioning, details, you know, push a little bit upfield, do this, do that. So he was a teacher at heart. He got his master's in education. And actually, very interestingly, he wrote his master's thesis on scouting in football.
Wow.
He wrote away to mostly college coaches at the time, but he also wrote to three NFL coaches, Hallis, Paul Brown, and there was one other pro coach that he wrote to. So he did his master's thesis in scouting.
So he's born in 1918. Did he fight in World War II?
He did not. He was not in any combat situation in World War II. He never went overseas. His last stint in the Navy V-12 program, which was a way for members of the program to be trained as in some type of officer capacity in the Navy if they were to go and fight, he never did. But he was in that Navy V-12 program in several different colleges. And I should say also, one of the misnomers about him, and you know, mentioning 1918, a lot of people think that about him. He was actually born in 1917, and he was 73 years old at the time of his death. He kind of fabricated his age over the years. He wanted to make himself seem a little younger, and for whatever reason, he also, his wife told a story over the years that he was kind of embarrassed that it took him so long to get through college. So when they met at Morningside in Allen's first college coaching stint, he wanted her to think that he was younger than he really was.
Interesting.
So he was either listed as born in 1918, born in 1922. He was actually born in 1917.
So he was 24 when we went into the war following Pearl Harbor. So he was a little bit old, based on his real age, to go over, right? At that point, 24 years old. I mean, everybody eventually went, but at that point, he was a little bit older than most of the average soldiers.
He probably was, right? I think he still could have gone over. I don't know what the age cap was at the time, but I think he was well within that. But he was in that program so he could be trained to eventually go over.
Right.
But he never did.
Got it.
And actually, one of the stories I told in the book is in his last stint in the Navy V-12 program, he was at Princeton University. And this, you know, only George Allen could maybe think of doing this. George Allen was a really good chess player, okay? So, and Einstein was an adjunct professor at Princeton at the time. So one day, one Sunday morning after church, Allen and a buddy of his, they got on the bus and they went toward Einstein's home. And they trudged also, you know, getting off the bus, they trudged through the snow. They got to the door, knocked on, and Einstein's assistant comes down and in a, like a German accent, she was talking to them. And George Allen says, is Professor Einstein here? I'd really like to play him in chess. The woman, the maid or whatever capacity, she invited him in the house. And then Einstein comes flying down the stairs and George Allen says, Professor, I'd like to really challenge you to a game of chess. And then Einstein says, well, did you bring a board? And Allen says, no, I forgot the board. And that was so uncharacteristic
right.
of George Allen, because he was, you know,
preparation
so prepared.
Freak. Yeah.
Preparation, yes. It was, and I actually wrote in the book, it was so antithetical to the way George Allen would carry himself in life. He was not prepared for that. But yeah, he did challenge Einstein. It was part of the moxie of George Allen. And
so what,
you know,
happened?
Going above
did,
and
I, did Einstein, did Albert Einstein bring a board down and did they play?
No, he didn't have a board. He wasn't a chess player.
Oh my God!
He did not have a board either, so they didn't play. But one thing that Einstein it is very interesting. As Allen and his buddy were leaving the house, Einstein spread his arms and he went like boom. Okay, so what he was saying was, and George Allen figured this out, you know, shortly after, because Einstein was signaling the atomic bomb, which Einstein
was
just
going to say they. Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, many of us recently saw the movie Oppenheimer, and there is that visit to Einstein's house in New Jersey. I think it was in New Jersey at the time. I don't think it was in Germany, but I think it was you're saying
right,
he was at Princeton at the time.
He lived in New Jersey at the time.
Yeah.
So, but Einstein was not, he wasn't directly involved in the project,
right.
But his theory of relativity was.
Exactly.
But anyway, so yeah, Einstein made this motion with his arms, but boom. So, you know, he was actually signaling the atomic bomb. And George Allen didn't know it at the time. This was like, so this was around December of 45.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm sorry, no, it was like January, February 45. So the bomb didn't go off until the
August,
summer.
Yeah.
But,
so Einstein just, as George Allen's there, he makes a gesture like a bomb going off. Like what? How would George Allen have known what he was talking about? He wouldn't have.
Oh, he didn't know it at the time.
But he remembers him doing that.
He remembers him doing that. He said it in an interview that he had with Steve Gubak, the late Steve Gubak, Washington Star, the reporter of the Redskins in the 70s, who later was Allen's spokesperson and press person for when he chaired the President's Council on Physical Fitness. Gubak gave me access to some really cool interviews that he had with George Allen over the years, and this is one of them. Allen told Gubak that in later years, after he finally figured out what Einstein had been talking about, he probably figured it out, you know, after the bomb was dropped,
right?
That's what Einstein was referring to by, you know, with the thing boom and spreading his arms, you know, apart and whatever. But George Allen didn't know it exactly at the time.
Yeah.
What that gesture meant.
That's crazy.
He knew it, you know, after the bomb had been dropped.
But like you said, I mean, the balls just to go up to his house and ring the doorbell or knock on the door and say, hey, let's play
challenge
chess.
Einstein to a game.
Yeah.
Challenged Einstein to a game in chess. But that was George Allen. I mean,
yeah.
He had the nerve to do that.
All right. So how does he He's not an – was he an athlete? I know he didn't play college sports, did he? Or am I wrong about that?
You are not. He did not play college – oh, I'm sorry. He played intramurals in college. He did not play under scholarship in any capacity or any varsity teams. But he did play intramural sports. He was actually a pretty good basketball player. And he was a three-way high school athlete.
Okay.
He was track, basketball, and football.
And this was in Detroit?
In the Detroit area, yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right, let's take a break, and then we'll get into George Allen, the coach, how he got into coaching, how he eventually made it to the Rams. We'll start to do that right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
This segment of the show brought to you by Window Nation. The temperatures are dropping rapidly. Energy costs are on the rise. If you've got old drafty windows, your furnace is working harder than ever to keep your family warm. Window Nation wants to help this month with 0% financing for 5 years, plus two free windows with every two you buy. Now's the time to protect your family from the elements, lower your energy costs, all the while upgrading the look and feel of your home. Call them at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. Mention my name, Kevin Sheehan. You'll get a free estimate and you'll get 0% interest for 5 years, plus buy two, get two free with no limit. 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. All right, so how does he get into coaching?
He approached Fritz Kreisler, who was the head coach of Michigan at the time. This was around 1947. He said, "Coach, I'd like to be considered to be on your staff." And so Kreisler said, "Sorry, we don't have a spot for you right now." So again, this is another the moxie of George Allen. He comes back to Kreisler a while later. He set an appointment. He got an appointment to speak to him again. So he comes back to him. He says, "Coach, listen, I'll pay you if you make me an assistant on your staff." So Kreisler says to him, "No, you don't have to pay me, but you're going to be an assistant on our 150-pound team," which was just starting. There were four teams in the Big Ten that were in that league. It was called the 150-pound Midget League. So George Allen was an assistant on that 150-pound team. I think it was Michigan, Ohio State, Wisconsin and one of the other Midwestern schools. So that's how, that was his very, very first start in coaching. His first head coaching position was at Morningside in 1948. Morningside in Iowa, Sioux City, Iowa.
Okay.
And then he jumped from there to Whittier in the Los Angeles area.
Right. Whittier was, I mean, we know about, that's when you just mentioned Whittier, I've certainly, I remember him coaching there. What was Whittier? Was that Division III college football? What was it?
It was what we would call today as a Division III program. I forgot how, I'd have to read up again on how they classified it, but it was not, it was what we would later define as Division III. Yes. It was a very low-level program.
And it was, and that was in the L.A. area?
It was in the Los Angeles area, yes.
Yeah, so and, how did he do?
He did well at both Morningside and Whittier. He had a above 500 record at both schools. In Whittier, he won the conference championship twice. He was a two-time winner of the conference championship. Interestingly, one of the coaches, or the coach that succeeded him, was Don Coryell at Whittier.
Wow.
Who actually had a much better record than George Allen. And as I also documented in the book, Allen was basically forced out at Whittier. Okay? The board didn't like him. He was doing a few unethical things. They didn't like, it had to do with recruiting, whatever. The players were rebelling too. They didn't like his style of offense. It was kind of like 3 yards in a cloud of dust. You know, he was a defensive-oriented coach even back then. They didn't really like it. They wanted him out. They liked the good old days, you know, like his predecessor was a very offensive-oriented coach, and they wanted that, you know, the athletic department at the school wanted that type of system back. So they kind of forced him out.
So where did
but
he
also,
go from
that's
there?
Where Allen met, that's where Allen met Richard Nixon. He met Richard Nixon in the early 50s. Nixon being a graduate of Whittier.
Of course. So they knew each other then when he was the football coach there? Because Nixon was such a sports fan.
He was a huge sports fan. I think he was the most astute sports fan who ever lived in the White House. I mean, he was just, president of the White House. As far as football, I mean, Nixon was really, really smart. I mean, this guy, he had such a deep memory for football. He could tell you stories about football history, names, whatever. He knew Tony Guillory's name, the player on the Los Angeles Rams who blocked a punt in that 67, that dramatic 67 win by the Rams over the Packers, which George Allen coached. In later years, he knew who Tony Guillory was. So, but that's where Allen met Richard Nixon. They actually met at an NCAA banquet in the early 50s. Somehow came in contact there. Nixon knew that Allen was the head coach at Whittier, so he wanted to meet him. So there's actually another story about Nixon and George Allen. They didn't meet when Allen first came to the nation's capital in 1971. And Nixon, of course, was in his third year in the White House. That's not where they actually met.
They met when George Allen was the coach at Whittier, you're saying?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, okay.
That's where they first
met. But it made it easier for Nixon to suggest various plays that George might want to run in a playoff game against the 49ers in 71. We'll get to that in a little bit. So where does he go from Whittier? How does he finally get to a big-time job in the NFL?
He knew Sid Gilman. After being let go or leaving Whittier, he got a job almost immediately with the Los Angeles Rams as an assistant coach. He was actually their offensive ends coach, which is really, when you think of it, he was a defensive-oriented coach, but they hired him to coach their offensive ends. And they still had, Crazy Legs Hurst.
Elroy Hurst,
still on that
yeah.
team.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was still on that team. They had Van Brocklin. He was on that team, I believe. I don't think they had traded him yet. So they still had some of the big names from the Rams earlier in the 50s. Sort of a glory period for them. They actually made it to the NFL championship game in 55 under Gilman. So he knew Gilman because Allen was able to get into Gilman's summer coaching camps. Allen being the head coach at Whittier, he found a way to get into Gilman's camps. So Gilman knew him,
mm-hmm.
and so Gilman hired him as an assistant in 1957.
Got it.
That was his entry into the NFL, basically.
And was it then how much longer before he went to Chicago and worked for Halas?
This was actually his first firing by the Rams was after the 1957 season. For whatever reason, they let him go. In my research, I could not find out exactly why.
Well, was he a pain in the ass? Was he just was there a shelf life? I mean, there clearly was when he became a head coach, but was he that way as a young coach too?
I don't know exactly why he was let go, but he was. You come to think of it, why would a coach at that time, an assistant coach, leave without a job? Okay, it wasn't Allen's decision to leave. He had to have been let go.
Right.
So he was let go at that point, and he was without a coaching job for a while. He ran a car wash in Los Angeles. It was called the Rams Car Wash. For some reason, he was able to use their name.
And also, I'm sure he didn't ask for permission.
He was also he was selling golf clubs.
Uh huh.
He was selling those on commission. He was selling the big weighted footballs also, okay? So he worked his way into the different training sites of the NFL teams, selling those footballs, and he got into the Bears camp, and there was a guy there who was on the Bears staff that kind of felt bad for him. The two had struck up a conversation, and so this person went to speak with Halas about getting George Allen a job on their staff. And so Halas eventually hired him heading into the 1959 season. Halas initially brought him on as a spy to because the Bears had a couple of late-season games against the Rams in 1958. So Halas originally brought him on as a spy, okay, to get information out of him approaching their games against the Rams. And then he hired him permanently as what was then known as the head talent scout in 1959, which today would be the equivalent of a general manager.
All right, so when does he become the great defensive mind and defensive, coordinator?
It was late in the 1962 season that Clark Shaughnessy left.
Okay.
Shaughnessy was like on the outs with Halas. The two didn't get along, so he just walked out with like three games left in the 62 season. So Halas tapped George Allen to take over for the remainder of the season as the head defensive coach or defensive coordinator. So then in January of 63, right after that season, January 63, Allen was named the head defensive coach. That's when he became he was an assistant on the staff as the defensive coordinator, but he was also the head talent scout at the time. And as you probably know, I mean, he drafted a number of Hall of Famers as in that role. He drafted Ditka in 1961. He drafted Sayers and Butkus in 1965, which is arguably the greatest or one of the greatest drafts in NFL history. He also drafted a guy named Steve DeLong in that 65 draft in the first round. They had three first-round picks that year. DeLong opted to play for the San Diego Chargers in the AFL.
Right.
And he made like two Pro Bowls in his career. So if DeLong had decided to play for the Bears, that would have made that whole sequence totally insane in terms of what George Allen had pulled off. But Butkus and Sayers were first ballot inductees into the Hall of Fame.
I want to make sure I'm understanding this. So you're saying that he was essentially the de facto GM while also being the defensive coordinator?
No, he was the GM. Well, the head defensive coach was today what we would call the GM.
Right.
Back then it was called like the head defensive coach or it wasn't even called defensive coordinator or whatever, or head defensive assistant.
So he had the job of coaching the defense, or however you would describe it, and also presided over the draft for the Bears.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah, I misunderstood what you said. Yes.
Okay.
He did preside over the draft. He was still the head talent scout, and he was the head defensive coach at the time.
Wow.
He held both of those roles from the beginning, from January of 63 through the end of the 1965 season when he left to coach the Rams in his first head coaching job.
I don't think I would bet you that a lot of people don't know that, because that 1965 Bears draft with Sayers and Butkus, you know, one and two Hall of Famers, and Dick Butkus obviously just passed away, has often been called one of the greatest drafts in NFL history. You know, and they had back then, I don't know, 16, 17, 18 rounds of the draft or whatever it was. But so George Allen was responsible for picking Butkus and Sayers.
He was the head, the top eye for talent on that Bears team.
Yeah.
As I wrote, I mean, I was very careful about this. You couldn't credit Allen entirely, but you had to think, hey, you know, they got Ditka in 61. Of course, you know, a Hall of Famer today. They drafted Ronnie Bull in 62. Who was the NFL Rookie of the Year. And back then, I mean, I think he rushed for only like 400 yards mm-hmm. in his rookie season. But he was still the Rookie of the Year. So, I mean, that was a great draft pick. And then Butkus and Sayers in 65. So George Allen played a major role in the drafting of those players. And I should also say in 65, he signed Brian Piccolo as a free agent. Piccolo was the leading rusher in the in the country at Wake Forest in his senior year, 64.
Wow.
So, yeah, he got Brian Piccolo as a free agent.
Wow. So, you know, they win the title in 63 with George Allen as the lead defensive guy. And then he gets the job, the head coaching job, his first NFL head coaching job with the Rams in what, 1966?
Correct.
Okay,
yes, that was his first year coaching the Rams.
And was he one of these sought after guys because they were, those Bears defenses were so good, and you know they had won the title in 63?
Oh, that's totally accurate. Yes, he was a hot name. He was probably the hottest name on the coaching market after the 63 season. And by the way, I want to say Ed Obradovich, one of the Bears players who I was fortunate enough to interview from that team. He totally credited Allen with the win in that 63 championship game over the Giants and that whole 63 season.
Yeah.
He gave complete credit to George Allen. And he was saying it was a total mystery to us why Halas didn't hire him as the head coach at that point, or why Halas didn't even hire him as a head coach in any of the ensuing seasons. It was George Allen's time. I mean, it was just, everybody was just totally confused. Why won't you promote George Allen? I mean,
wasn't Halas still the head coach?
Yes, he was still the head coach. Halas would not relinquish the head coaching duty.
Yeah.
He didn't relinquish them until like the, I think 67 was his last season. But several years before that, Obradovich was telling me it was time to put him out to pasture. I mean, he had been around long enough. And interestingly, in that 65 season, the Bears did finish 9-5. They didn't make the postseason that year, and that was Allen's last year with the Bears. But they wanted Allen as their head coach. And so, yes, he was highly sought after that 63 championship game. And and then Dan Reeves, the Rams owner, hired him after the 65 season, which is another that whole sequence in terms of his hiring by the Rams. Halas took him to court because he believes that Allen was in breach of contract because he had committed to taking the Rams job.
Right.
And there was a stipulation in Allen's Bears contract saying that he held he knew all the secrets, or it was very important knowledge. I forgot the exact wording.
Right.
But there's this wording in the contract, and that by going to another team, he could, you know, somehow word could get out about the Bears, secrets about the Bears.
Right.
So Halas took him to court for breach of contract. And Halas actually won the case. But then he said to the judge, listen, that's it. You know, I proved my point. I won in principle. George Allen is free to go anywhere he wants.
How could you, in the NFL, prevent somebody from leaving for a better job and claim that, like, he's got proprietary information about your organization that he's going to use to defeat him? That's silly now, right?
I think it was totally crazy. I think there was a jealousy on the part of Halas.
Yeah.
I think that he just didn't want to let Allen go. And also, you know, he thought he could maybe, you know, he could squeeze out a few more really good seasons with him. But it was time for Allen to have a head coaching job. I mean, I believe he was 46 years old at the time. I mean, it was his time. And so, yeah, I mean, he got his first head coaching position 66 with the Rams. And he inherited a pretty good players, but they were actually a very mediocre to bad team, just kind of the same way the Redskins were when he inherited them or when he started coaching them in 71.
So, all right, we want to get to Washington here soon, but he was incredibly successful with the Rams as a head coach. Just for everybody, George Allen never had a losing season as a head coach in his however many years he was a head coach. How many years was he a head coach, Mike?
He was a head coach for 12 years in the NFL, and then he was a head coach for two seasons in the USFL.
Yeah.
So in those 14 seasons, he never had a losing season. I mean, that is phenomenal.
Incredible. Incredible.
You
yes.
Know, actually,
so
I think that was one of his downfalls, actually, but I'll get to that later. We can talk about that.
Tell me about the Rams.
Those Rams teams were better overall than his Redskin teams. And in fact, I think the 67 Rams team that he coached was his best overall team. That team finished 11-1-2, went to the playoffs, lost to the Packers in the first round of the playoffs. And back in those days, I mean, you alternated sites for the host city.
Right.
So even though the Packers finished 9-4-1 that season and the Rams were 11-1-2, the Rams had to go to Green Bay to play them.
Oh, man.
But I don't even know if they would have beaten them in L.A. because the Rams were coming off two emotionally draining wins. They beat the Packers in the next-to-last game of the 67 season on that Tony Guillory blocked punt and then ensuing touchdown in the waning seconds. And then they beat the Baltimore Colts. And this I have to mention. So the Colts also finished 11-1-2 that season and did not even go to the playoffs that year.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine that?
Why?
That's inconceivable.
Well, I mean, I know that there wasn't a wild card at that point. But, I mean, what were the Rams and the Colts in the same division?
They were in the same division. They somehow put the Colts in the Coastal Division.
Mm.
So I can maybe
what was the division the Redskins were in? It wasn't the East. What was that called? Whatever.
That is good. It's escaping me right now.
It's fine.
Was it the Atlantic?
So the Rams and the Colts, you're saying played. What did you say they played the last game of the year? So it essentially was for a playoff berth.
Exactly, yes. That was to decide who would go to the playoffs. They were four playoff teams and four divisions. So it wasn't like seven teams from each conference going to the playoffs back then it was four teams total that went to the playoffs. And so the Rams and Colts played the last regular season game that year. They played in L.A. The Rams crushed them that day. I mean, and the fearsome foursome, that was probably their best game. I mean, they sacked Johnny Unitas like probably seven times that day. I mean, they just dominated that game. So that 11-1-2 Colts team did not go to the playoffs.
That's crazy.
The Rams went, and they lost to the Packers in the first round of the playoffs. I think, though, that was George Allen's best coach. That was his best season overall. He and his best team. And that fearsome foursome, I mean, they were. First of all, he got Roger Brown that year. Rosie Greer had a torn Achilles tendon in the preseason. So this was George Allen. He got Roger Brown, the great defensive lineman from the Detroit Lions. It's like he had him on his Rolodex. He knew he was available right away. He got him. Brown filled in for Greer. The fearsome foursome kept rolling along. Deacon Jones had a great season. Merlin Olsen.
Right.
They were so intimidating, so dominant.
By the way, I just pulled up the 67 season. Washington was in the Capital Division, it was called.
Capital Division.
They went 5-6-3. But this is what's so crazy about the NFL back then. Like you said, the Rams and the Colts both finished 11-1-2 in the same division. And the Colts didn't go to the postseason, but the Packers at 9-4-1 and the Browns at 9-5 and the Cowboys at 9-5 did. And then beyond that, the team with the best record in the NFL by far had to play at Lambeau in the 67 first round. They lost 28-7. And then what followed was the infamous Ice Bowl game between the Packers and the Cowboys a week later. And the Packers won that game, went on to beat the Raiders in Super Bowl II, which was, of course, Lombardi's last game in Green Bay. So, so you think that 67 Rams team, Roman Gabriel was the quarterback, I'm assuming, right?
Right. He was the quarterback, and he was on his way to becoming, I wouldn't say that he was ever, well, he was an elite quarterback by 69, but he was on his way to reaching that level. He was a really, really good quarterback for that era. Also, the Rams had a receiver back then named Bernie Casey, mm-hmm. who Allen had acquired before the 67 season.
The referee?
Bernie Casey later.
The guy that became
the actor.
He was an actor? Oh, I was thinking of the referee.
No. Yeah, he was actually an actor in Brian's Song, and then later he had a nice Hollywood career. But Allen had acquired him before the season. He was a really good receiver. We talked about the fearsome foursome, and there were other great players on that defense. Ed Metter, the safety. They had really solid players on offense. Roman Gabriel being one of them. So they were That was a very, very good team. I think that team was better than the 72 Redskins that went to Super Bowl VII. I think that, I'm not saying it would have been any closer if that playoff game had been in L.A., but it's just the way it was set up back then that the 11-1-2 Rams had to go on the road to play the 9-4-1 Packers.
Right. So in L.A., I'm looking it up right now. He went to the playoffs in two of his five seasons, even though his records were 8-6, 11-1-2, 10-3-1, 11-3, 11-3, and 9-4-1 in his final year. And he didn't win the in 69. With a better record, 11-3, he had to. Oh, no, Minnesota had a better record, but he had to play a playoff game in Minnesota. I'm sure, just like Lambeau, it was probably frigid, and they lost 23-20. So there, So there he was as a head coach, already kind of starting that process of not getting it done in the postseason. But they didn't know that at that time. There was nothing.
He was. I don't think that the pressure. I mean, of course, the pressure was there, but I don't think he had been. Labeled a coach yet who couldn't win the big one.
Right.
Maybe, you know, there were a few whispers here and there. But in 71, he lost to the 49ers in the first round of the playoffs. So he had to win that first round playoff game against the Packers in 72. And then, of course, he beat the Cowboys in the NFC Championship game the following week to go to Super Bowl VII. But getting back to that 69 Rams team, I also want to say that team started at 11-0. And lost its last three regular season games, and then went into that first round playoff game against the Vikings that you referred to and lost. But they lost a lot of their momentum toward the end of that season. And one of the criticisms of George Allen's teams over the years is that his players were burned out toward the end.
Right.
I don't think that was totally a situation where he wasn't playing the starters toward the end of that regular season, but his players would say over the years they were kind of burned out toward the end. Merlin Olsen said it, I think a reason why he didn't perform well in the playoffs. He lost in the first round of the playoffs four times in Washington, so twice in L.A. and four times in D.C.
I've always felt there's a lot of similarities between George Allen and Marty Schottenheimer in particular. They really rode their teams very hard. They were tough, old school coaches, and neither one of them had the playoff success that they had in the regular season. So let's just go back to the last year in LA is his fifth year in LA. It's 1970. They go 9-4-1. His record in 5 years as the Rams head coach, people, 49-17-4. There was no overtime back then. That's why they had all those ties. And so why did it come to an end in L.A.?
He and Reeves were at each other's throats. Actually, The end of the 1970 season is the second time that Reeves fired him. Reeves fired him after the 68 season, and this is after three winning seasons and the two great records in 67 and 68. Reeves fired him after the 68 season. He couldn't stand George Allen's ways. George Allen was on the phone all the time. He was just, you know, running up phone bills, spending big bucks for veteran players. And, you know, back then it was a lot of money that he had the authorization to do that. Reeves ran the scouting department and he handled the draft. George Allen was doing the active. He was in charge of active players. So Reeves couldn't stand that. The two didn't talk that much. I also think Reeves was a bit jealous of George Allen, too, because George Allen was getting he was in the spotlight. He was getting the fame. So Reeves was jealous of that. Reeves fired him after the 68 season. And in one of the surreal events in George Allen's life, and there were several, George Allen called a press conference after the 68 season. And 20 of his veteran Ram players showed up at the press conference. Merlin Olsen, Jones, Metter, there were about 20 players there, and they said, basically, they were all veteran players. They said, Dan Reeves, if you don't rehire George Allen, we're quitting. So several weeks later, Reeves rehired him. Now, Reeves would say, I didn't rehire him because of, you know, I wasn't influenced by the players in any way, but I'm sure that had something to do with it. And then, you know, 2 years later, Reeves fired him for the second time after the 70 season. But that was still after Allen had that remarkable record, which you just referred to. I mean, why would you fire a coach at that point, even though he hadn't won a Super Bowl? Edward Bennett Williams, really, he wanted it badly. Jack Hancock wanted it badly. Those two had actually tried to get Allen after he was fired the first time following the 68 season. So after the 70 season, they really went hard after him, and they signed him. Cook was actually, he was still living in Los Angeles. He owned the Lakers and the Kings.
Right.
But he was building up enough interest in the team to where he was close to being the majority owner. And he had the most influence among the owners. But he let Williams run the daily operations of the team. It was just the way the league was set up at the time.
Yeah.
Because of its cross-ownership rules, which, you know, you flip forward to today. And Josh Harris, I mean, he has these interests in other teams and other leagues, but I guess the cross-ownership rules don't exist. But so they got him, both Cook and Edward Bennett Williams got him after the 70 season, and he was hired in D.C. at that point.
We're talking to Mike Richmond about his book on George Allen, the legendary coach, Hall of Fame coach. We'll get to George and why and how he got to Washington right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Why Washington? You mentioned the Cook connection, but why Washington? I would imagine that he was sought after by a lot of teams.
Yeah, well, the Eagles were one team that wanted him after the 70 season. I think it was because they offered him the most lucrative contract. And he also wanted to be in the Washington area, I mean, for education purposes. I mean, his kids, two of whom were still in high school at the time. So, you know, he wanted it for that reason, too. But they lured him to D.C. I mean, he had built a friendship with Jack Hancock, too. That's part of the reason
right.
why he chose D.C. I mean, the two became friends when Allen was in L.A. Allen would visit Cook's Ranch in the Sierra Nevada Mountains in California. So the two became pretty good friends, and Cook got him tickets to Lakers, Allen and his family tickets to Lakers and Kings games. So that is a major reason, too, why he chose Washington. But I'm sure he loved the lucrative offer. I mean, $125,000 a year over 7 years. So now also there was something called a stock option at the time.
Yeah.
And it was not what the Washington Post reported. And I never saw the contract. I never got my hands on it. But what the Washington Post reported is that the stock option was not actually part of the contract. It was something that Cook had written to Allen about in a separate letter. It was like some type of an offer, but Allen never took advantage of it. So in later years, when he and Edward Bennett Williams were negotiating a contract extension, that stock option was never included in the extension, which Allen did not like and is a reason that he wanted to part ways with the Redskins after the 77 season.
Yeah, I think Len Shapiro, who I had on a while back, it was, you know, as Snyder's era was coming to an end, he kind of talked about that. Now, you know, it was a stock option, obviously, for equity in the team. And, you know, if he had held on to that for a long period of time, it would have been worth a lot of money. So, so he gets full control, right? When he gets the job in D.C., part of that is this is his show. He's the general manager and he's the head coach. This is, as Ron, you know, as we referred to it when Ron got hired, this is coach-centric. He doesn't have, you know, a personnel guy.
That's absolutely correct. He was hired as the head coach and the general manager. He had full authority to do whatever he wanted with that team, build it however he wanted, player personnel, the draft. It was his show. Edward Bennett Williams gave him, you know, complete rope to do what he wanted. And one of Allen's first projects was Redskins Park.
Yeah.
And as you know the saying, at the Redskins Welcome Home Luncheon that year, Williams quipped, "I gave him an unlimited budget, and he exceeded it.
Yeah.
Well, that was in reference to, in large part, to Redskins Park. Although Allen had acquired a lot of veteran players up to that point, but he spent a lot of money, or what would then be considered a lot of money for Redskins Park. I think it was like $500,000.
Why did he pick way out in Northern Virginia?
He wanted to be away from the city.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want the players to be distracted by anything in D.C., you know, because their offices were at the time on Connecticut Avenue,
yeah.
And they practiced by RFK Stadium in Anacostia. He didn't want the players to be distracted by anything in the city. He just wanted to be far away. He loved the, you know, back then, I mean, it was horse country.
Yeah, right.
But there was nothing out there.
Yeah.
It was just Dulles Airport. That was the only, I guess, major site that was in, you know, proximity to where they were in Chantilly. But that's why he chose Redskins Park. It was isolated, and he had, you know, trees surrounding the practice facility. And, you know, George Allen being George Allen, he named the trees, by the way.
He named the trees. What did he name them?
Hickory Oak or something.
Yeah.
Or, but he gave them, he had a love for nature, actually. So he named the trees.
The book is George Allen, A Football Life. The author is Mike Richmond. You can get a signed copy of the book at MikeRichmondJournalist.com. Next week, part two of my conversation with Mike. George Allen arrives in 1971, and he begins to win immediately.
Three cheers for the Redskins. Hip, hip! Hip, hip! Hip, hip! Hey, let's have three more! Hip, hip.